Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's Connecting Faith. Glad to have you tuned in. I'm Neil Stavem. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you and have good conversations here over the lunch hour. Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, we're going to talk a little bit about activities, well, tending to focus south of the border.
Yes.
We're going to deal with immigration, the church, and the Bible. So we often think of Latin America when we talk about that. And it just gives us a good opportunity to mention that our ministry spotlight this month is Hope Coffee, where they're working in Honduras. In fact, growing some high-quality coffee there. And Hope Coffee helps pays good prices for these small coffee farmers. The coffee is sent here across the U.S. And the proceeds all end up going back to ministry in Honduras, where they build homes, dig wells, sponsor churches. So some great relationship. And
that's wonderful. It goes directly back to those that are providing it. So
yeah,
pretty awesome ministry.
So anyway, if you're a coffee drinker, neither Ted or I actually ever got the taste to it.
Never did develop a tea. I mean, I'm kind of a tea aficionado, but not coffee so much for me.
As I've mentioned before, so that it goes back to my frugal Norwegian father,
yeah,
who would just throw a few grains of coffee in the pot on the stove, and it's like, well, he'd boil it up, and it looked kind of about the same, color as the rusty tap water in the farm. And it's well, I guess I'll just stick with the water.
No. Even going to church where they had the good stuff didn't do it for you, huh?
Like the smell.
Yeah.
Never really got into it.
We just sent out a bunch of Hope Coffee, too, to supporters from Share. So thanks to those who did that. Again,
yes,
for us.
By the way, thank you. And we were just actually packing up some boxes again just the other day. So those are in the mail or getting in the mail soon. So for all of you that gave at that Team 360 level, thank you for your generosity. We sure appreciate your overwhelming support. It's a great fall to Share. And again, if you have opportunity to fulfill that pledge, that's even better. We want to give out the phone number, too, if you want to talk with us today about immigration, the church, and the Bible. It's a conversation that has a lot of opinions on, and you may have some questions. We're going to get some answers to the questions as well. But our phone number is 877-933-2484. And Christians at the Border is the focus, the title of a book that we have visited with this guest before. The subtitle, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. By Danny Carroll. Daniel Carroll serves as a distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary. He's soon moving to Wheaton to do some graduate work there. He founded IDEALS, the Spanish language training program. He's also an adjunct professor at the Central American Theological Seminary in Guatemala City. He's author of several books, several of them are relating to the Old Testament, Amos, the Prophet and His Oracles, research on the Book of Amos, theory and practice in Old Testament ethics, contributing editor to Prism, and we're honored to have him back with us today as we talk immigration and Christians and the Bible. Danny, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
And you, I suspect you probably drink good Latin American coffee, don't you?
Well, good Guatemalan coffee, right?
Okay, yes,
I'm half
right.
Guatemalan, so I enjoy the Guatemalan, and I actually am familiar with coffee, so that was good to hear that you're working with them this week.
It's a wonderful ministry we found out about, and excited to bring it up to our listeners. We're going to talk immigration today. As you said, you're part Guatemalan, so this issue is near and dear to your heart and life experience. The book came out a few years ago, and we'll kind of highlight some of what's in the book. But I think last time we talked, we had just learned that there are about 57,000 kids warehoused along the U.S.-Mexican border, and that's not even the news anymore. But it just kind of reminds us that, boy, there are real life issues and concerns here that they don't always make the front page, but they certainly affect a lot of people.
Yes, and I think what the fact that you have so many children does is highlight how desperate people are to get a new life and to leave, where they are because of violence or natural disasters. I don't know if you saw about this mudslide in Guatemala City. Hundreds were buried because the poor, because they can't buy land, will house themselves on the ravines. And so you get the heavy rain, and the mudslide covered a whole village right outside the city. So that's the kind of thing that drives people to try to get in just for their children's sake.
You know, well, speaking of children, I mean, obviously, you know, that's an issue along the U.S.-Mexican border with these kids in kind of limbo. But children have become sort of the hot-button topic, it seems like, for some presidential campaign conversation. The word anchor baby came up, and, you know, a lot of conversation about citizenship and the 14th Amendment. So maybe give us a little... help us with some understanding. What are we talking about here, and why has this become so contentious?
Well, I think it's important to understand what the law actually says. You hear this term anchor baby, and so the person who doesn't know immigration law assumes that the person is trying to have a child in this country as a means of getting in. But according to current U.S. law, if that baby is born in this country, that baby cannot sponsor that parent until he or she is 21 years old. So that's not what I would call a great immigration strategy if you're trying to get into this country, because you have to wait 21 years. Now, that child is a citizen because of being born here, but that child can do nothing for the parent or for any of the family for 21 years.
Which is, I mean, that is... at the heart of kind of much of the problem, isn't it, is that there's such a long waiting period. I mean, there doesn't seem to really be, is there a path to citizenship, as we like to use the word?
Well, there is and there isn't. What is so antiquated, and people don't know this either, the U.S. system works on quotas, international quotas, and those quotas can get filled up very quickly. For the entire country, for instance, the quota for unskilled labor is between 5 and 10,000 annually. Well, you can see this country actually needs hundreds of thousands every year of unskilled labor for harvesting and construction and things like this. And so, but that law, that quota hasn't been touched for many, many, many years, because the whole system is such a political hot button. So I think what people need to realize is that the quota system needs to be updated beyond the political jargon. The system itself is so complicated and contradictory that it needs to get updated. So when people are talking about immigration reform, it's not about opening the borders, because that's the caricature. It's basically moving the system into the 21st century, because it is not as it now stands.
You said the needs are you know, in the thousands in terms of labor, even unskilled labor, right? The economic growth and development, I mean, that still relies a great deal, as you mentioned, harvesting and maybe building trade. Some of those things still rely a great deal on immigrant labor, don't they?
Yes, and not only construction and farming, but also you're looking at people landscaping. Here in Denver, you see immigrants working in construction, roofing, nannying, working in restaurants. What you're looking at is largely unskilled labor, which we need in this country by the hundreds and hundreds of thousands, but the current quota system can't meet that. And that's been one of the suggestions for immigration reform, is to key quotas to annual economic need, and that kind of, for me, makes common sense.
What would that look like? Explain what that would look like. Is just raising the limits, or it becomes sort of a fluctuating?
It would be fluctuating according to economic need. So if a certain year you need a certain number, or you guesstimate a certain number for harvesting, let's just keep with that example, then you would make that adjustment. If the next year that goes down, you can bring it down. But what you're doing is you're actually tying in the quota system to economic need, which in the 21st century just makes common sense. Otherwise, the work won't get done, or it'll be done by people who live in the shadows, which creates a whole other series of problems.
We hear the numbers, I guess, about the kind of the shadow population, if you will. Give us a sense of maybe what is happening today in terms of immigrants that are in our country and maybe coming in still, or maybe there's, I don't know, is there still a dramatic push to come to the U.S., or has that slowed down?
Well, actually, over the last year and a half to 2 years, the largest number of people coming into this country is coming in from Asia and has replaced Latin America as the largest number of people coming in. Most people don't realize that. Most people don't realize that undocumented Koreans number between 15 to 20% of that population. They don't come over the southern border. They came in on tourist visas, student visas, short-term work visas, and then just stay. So the whole issue is much more complicated, but it shows that the problem with the U.S. current immigration policy is it's about entry. It doesn't really track you once you're in, and that's another part of the immigration reform idea. But what happens then is once you're in, and we have 11 to 12 million people who we estimate that are in here undocumented, under current U.S. legislation, there is nothing they can do to get rights with the law. Most people think, well, there must be an office or a fine to pay or something. They just don't want to. Well, actually, under current law, there is no line, there is no fine. There is nothing they can do to remedy their situation. The only thing that current U.S. law contemplates if you're in here without documents is deportation. And so what some states have done is try to make life so miserable that immigrants would self-deport, because to try to deport 11 to 12 million people would be impossible economically. So that's another part of it. We need to think through not only how to control and organize the border better, but then add a whole piece to the system about how to integrate those who are here to do that properly in an orderly fashion with certain filters and things like this, which you never hear this kind of conversation going on in the political rhetoric, sadly, but that's the reality of what the law actually is and what the people are living.
We're talking today about immigration, the church, and the Bible. That's the subtitle for the book by Danny Carroll called Christians at the Border. And Daniel Carroll is a professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary. He's also an adjunct professor at the Central American Theological Seminary in Guatemala City. He's authored several books. He's with us today. We're going to jump in here in just a moment to talk a little bit about what does the Bible have to say about immigration. We'll get some fresh insight, perhaps, on what a biblical view of the stranger and the sojourner looks like. We do have four copies of this book to give away. This would be a good resource if you care about this issue, and I hope that you do, and want to get some more fresh insight on that. Christians at the Border, four copies available, and you can sign up for that. We do a drawing whenever we have resources available. We do the drawing at the end of the hour. And to get that, you just call us at 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. And if you have a question, of course, we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. And if it's easier to drop us a note, you can do that online. MyFaithRadio.com is our website. Then just go to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there. You can submit your question at MyFaithRadio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. We'll continue in a minute. Talking today about Christians at the Border. That's the title of the book from Daniel Carroll. The subtitle is Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. This is a second edition. It was first written, I think, in 2008. It's been updated, and it's important conversation because, as he says in the book, too often discussions default to the passionate ideological arguments, economic wrangling, or racial sentiments that dominate national discourse. And Danny Carroll is an Old Testament professor. He's also born in, he is a Guatemalan mother, I think, right? Is that right, Danny?
Yes. Guatemalan mother, and I spent time growing up there in Guatemala as a child and young man, and then I actually taught in Guatemala for about 15 years. And I'm still adjunct in Guatemala.
Sure. And he's a professor of Old Testament, Denver Seminary, and author of the book Christians at the Border. And we do want to talk about, you know, getting some perspective. Is it, you know, do we, do Christians, you know, have the right, you know, framework? Do we just, do we find a verse out of the Old Testament and sort of camp on that? Or, you know, is there a New Testament theology that helps inform us in this area as well?
Yes, I think that's part of the problem. We tend to land on a couple of verses, whether in the Old or New Testament. But what I try to show in the book is that the whole issue of migration from the book of Genesis on weaves its way through the biblical story and even into the Gospels and into the epistles. One of the things that I try to point out is, you know, in the Genesis 1 account, we're told to be fruitful and multiply and to fill the earth. And in a sense, migration is part of the human DNA. The history of the world is the history of migrations. And right now we're seeing migrations in the hundreds of millions that is unprecedented, but it's really just an ongoing pattern since the beginning of time.
Which, you know, maybe we can talk a bit about that, because certainly our attention has been focused on Europe. And, you know, are there some things we can learn maybe from their response to Syrian refugees and others from Middle East pouring in? And, you know, there's certainly been some arguments that maybe even Europe's racial problems stem back to maybe not the right attitude or approach toward immigration and refugees.
Right. I think what we need to do is kind of sort out some things. I think the place for a Christian to start is to establish what one would hold to be the biblical foundations. And then once those are kind of established, then to move to the pragmatic discussions, which you have to get to about how many or can a country absorb, how does this done, what is the infrastructure like, what's happening worldwide. And the Europe piece is just exacerbating the whole thing. But there's about 4 million Syrian refugees that have left, and they've massed in Jordan, in Lebanon, and in Iraq, and also into Turkey. They're getting on boats in the Mediterranean, fleeing a terrible war where they're, you know, the common person's caught between, you know, a cruel dictator, and now is being supported by the Russian government. The whole ISIS radical Islam issue, and their own people who were trying to overthrow the dictator. And so they're kind of caught between three violent options. And so they're fleeing with their children, as best they can. So what you're seeing is a crisis of incredible proportions, which should trigger, actually, I would hope, some kind of Christian compassion. But then you've got to process the pragmatics of it. And what we can do is look at what Europe is doing and learn some lessons, both good and bad, on those kind of pragmatic fronts.
Well, I'll give you a chance to maybe reflect on a few observations from Europe and also from the U.S. Policy. But let's go back and talk about, set some of those biblical foundations, review them. As you said, we oftentimes pick a verse or two. What does God's Word have to say about the sojourner?
A lot, actually. As I mentioned, I think the fact that we're told to fill the earth kind of puts into the human soul migration. I mean, even in this country, we move cities, we move across state lines, looking for a better life for our kids, a new job. And what you're seeing is the same phenomenon worldwide, but now it's not state borders, it's national borders. And so you're seeing something that's very human. But then what you see throughout the Bible is, you know, God's concern for vulnerable people. In the Old Testament law, there was four categories. There was the widow and the orphan, there was the poor, and the fourth category that is lumped with the other three are the sojourners and the immigrants. And so what the law did was put into place a series of what we would call now safety nets, with the expectation, of course, that these immigrants would integrate into their national life. But if you look at not only the laws, but the Old Testament is full of migration stories, Abraham going to Egypt looking for food and willing to lie to get across that border to feed his family. This is in Genesis 12. Joseph is another migration story. Daniel, Ruth is a classic one, who comes over from Moab as the foreigner and is eventually embraced by the townspeople of Bethlehem and go to Jesus, fleeing as a refugee with his family from Herod. So you have the stories, you have the laws, you have the demand to be hospitable in both testaments. And in fact, if I could just add one more, it's amazing that when you go to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11, that migration is used as a metaphor for the Christian faith, that we all are sojourners, that we all are strangers in a strange land. And what you're seeing is that this very human phenomenon and a biblical phenomenon is now being used to describe the Christian faith because we serve another king, we have another citizenship, we should feel strange in this land. And so what I try to tell people is, maybe God is bringing us immigrants to remind us about what it means to be strange, because now we are having to host strangers in our midst. And maybe we've lost the strangeness of this place. We've seen with recent Supreme Court things, of course, that I think those who are strong evangelical Christians are going to become increasingly strange to the culture around us. And maybe the immigrants can actually teach us some things about that.
God uses a variety of opportunities to reveal himself and his character and how we're supposed to live as his followers. And it very well might be, as Danny Carroll's talking to us about, that we are strangers and aliens in this land. So how do we care for those that come to our borders in that same situation? And how do we practice hospitality? And we're going to talk a little bit more about integration and all those things as well. Talking today to Daniel Carroll, who is a professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary. He founded IDEAL. It's a Spanish language training program. He's also an adjunct professor at the Central American Theological Seminary in Guatemala City, author of several books. And the one that we're referencing is called Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. And this is an updated edition. It's from Brazos Press. We've got four copies to give away. I'd love to make sure that you could get one of these good resources and join the conversation. Sign up for that at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, and then we'll take your questions as well as we continue our conversation about immigration, the church, and the Bible. Stay tuned for more. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Talking today about immigration, the church, and the Bible. What does the Bible really have to say about welcoming the stranger? And how do we understand those biblical foundations before we start dealing with some of the pragmatic concerns, of which there are many? The book titled Christians at the Border is written by our guest today, Daniel Carroll. Danny's a distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary, also teaches at the Central American Theological Seminary in Guatemala City. That's not actually how they say it in Spanish, but that's Danny allowed me to just, my fourth grade Spanish has failed me once again. Danny, we've got a caller on the line. We'll go to Terry in Sioux Falls with a question or a comment. Terry, you're on with Danny Carroll. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jerry.
Oh, sorry, yes.
And no, that's okay. I'm very thankful to talk to you, Danny, and the book. I can't wait to read it. I just wanted to say that a lot of the things that you've touched on is really important. And my husband being military with the Coast Guard for 25 years and still working for the military out of San Francisco, a lot of things that we have seen, even though I'm in South Dakota right now, have been you know, the immigrants coming across from places like Haiti, from Dominican Republic, and even from Asia, and still that happens a lot. Back then when he was doing the operations out of the Caribbean, a lot of times they brought them back to their original country, because if they touched the, you know, United States soil, then they would be, you know, processed in the U.S., and it was a longer processing, you know, thing that they would do there. But if they brought them back before they got to the soil, then they wouldn't have to deal with any of the issues of, you know, being, having to be processed to go through any kind of, you know, where they want to become safe in the United States. And that's still happening today. And then when they get to the United States, there's no place really for them to go. It's a very difficult situation and dangerous situation. A lot of times the boats sank. You know, there was a lot of rescues out at sea, and it was a very dangerous situation. And then the laws that were written and are written in the United States are very, they're not organized, and there's nothing that gives them any kind of hope, you know, to be processed. I mean, San Francisco is a sanctuary city, and we have some of those there, but living there for the last 10 years, you see a lot of immigrants that are there that are just standing around looking for work, waiting to be tapped on the shoulder to do a job that's very, you know, menial, and then that's it. And that's the way it goes there. And getting processed is very difficult. So that was kind of my statement. And listening to you put this in perspective is really important. And I think people need to see this and listen to it.
Well, Jerry, thanks for your call. Yeah, go ahead.
I appreciate that, Jerry, very much. And I think you've highlighted a couple of things. One is most people just assume that the law is good because it's a U.S. law, and the U.S. law just is not very functional. And that's the issue. It needs to be reformed. And this is where I wish the national discussion would get past the rhetoric and just get to the whole idea of updating and streamlining and contemplating new areas that the law, you know, doesn't do right now. One of the nice things about this country is we have the right to change laws that we think are inadequate or inadequated or antiquated or actually wrong. And so that's one of the blessings that we have here in this country. Let me just add one thing, and then you can jump in too. But what she was talking about, people standing around looking for work, what you begin to appreciate is that these people actually live day to day because they need work, and they can't get a full-time job, can't get insurance. And so they're on the street corner or in a parking lot at a Home Depot or something. And it reminds me of the parable that Jesus gives of the workers waiting in the town square, if you remember that parable.
Yeah.
And that is a parable that reflects the history of migration in the world. You can go to any country in the world, you'll see the same phenomenon of recent arrivals standing on street corners in the parks, just waiting for some kind of job. And it's interesting that this actually is picked up as a parable in the Gospels.
We, you know, we hear about, you know, boat people, I guess. I mean, it was something and issued during the Vietnam War and post that, and it's still going on today, though, right? Isn't it? Cuba, you know, and Central America, wherever it might be, that we, and as Jerry said, they've got no place to go if they make it here. It's not particularly safe.
And it doesn't exclude them from, you know, certain quotas and things like that. Another piece that's interesting about the Caribbean is Cuba has a unique dispensation with the U.S. government. If a Cuban touches U.S. soil, they're automatically legal. And this goes back to the whole Fidel Castro thing that's been going on now for decades. But that's what we did for the Cubans. If they touch U.S. soil, they're legal. And that's been both good and bad. My sister-in-law actually is Cuban. My brother married a Cuban. But if you're from Dominican Republic, you don't have that luxury. We let in refugees because of the Haitian crisis, but that's a whole other category. Refugees do not come in as regular immigrants. They come in under a different status in the process. It's very different. And these are the subtleties. If you're an asylee, for instance, if you're fleeing political persecution, which is very hard to prove, but another category is asylum. So you've got these different categories that are out there.
Complicated, and as you said, if we could update and streamline, it would make a big difference. One of the things, as you were touching on, Dan, I'd like you to go back to that. We were talking about some of the foundations, God, concern for the vulnerable, and the migration stories throughout the Scripture. In fact, it'd probably do us well to read the Scriptures with kind of migration stories as the kind of overarching theme, just to see how it develops. But you talked about, there was expectations that there would be some integration. It seems like maybe Europe is experiencing some of the challenges they are today because they haven't really addressed the integration issue, and that's becoming sort of contentious here as well, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's a very important part of the conversation. When you look at Old Testament law, for instance, what you have actually are different terms for different kinds of foreigners, and there was a certain kind of foreigner that apparently was not interested in integration, and they were seen not in a favorable light. The others, there's another term, would be interested and committed to integrating into Israelite culture. And so what you see, for instance, is that they would have to listen to the periodic reading of the law, which makes sense, because if you're going to integrate, you have to understand how things work. There was the expectation that they would begin to integrate into the religious life of Israel, which is all the things that would involve at that time. On the other hand, what you find is when Israelites are out of the land, you'll find something like Jeremiah's letter to the exiles in Jeremiah 29, where he is advising Israelites who've been taken away into exile to invest in Babylon, to plant their farms and to build their homes and to have children. And so what you're seeing in the Bible is, and I mentioned this in the book, I walked through several scenarios, biblical scenarios, you're seeing various kinds of integration. One is kind of legal integration, another is cultural integration. And you're seeing, for instance, someone like Ezra, who has no interest in culturally engaging Babylon. He wants to go back home. You'll see someone like Nehemiah, who's working for the king. He'll come back and build the walls of Jerusalem, and then he goes right back. You see, and so you've got all these different kinds of integration stories, even in the Bible. So not only does the Bible orient us in terms of attitudes toward the foreigner, it actually gives us various kinds of examples of the integration process.
And is it the cultural integration where we maybe are creates the most concern or the tensions?
Yeah, I think that's true, and that's kind of the human thing. I mean, all of us feel kind of odd when we encounter people who are different. But it seems to me that even if there's a stream in this country that is very fearful of certain kinds of Muslim immigration, though we tend to stereotype them as well. But if we are committed Christians who are told even to love our enemies, that would be an interesting thing to process as well, you see. What if we have immigrants from a different faith who are very needy, who are fleeing a war? What's the Christian response, you see? I mean, it seems to me that we actually become more Christian as we reach out to those who are different from us, because this is actually showing the very sacrificial love of Christ and of Jesus, who calls us to love those who would be our enemies. I mean, so that's a whole other dimension that I would encourage your listeners to begin to process this whole topic in a truly comprehensive Christian way. And it gets really challenging, not only in terms of kind of pragmatic government issues, it gets very important in terms of Christian attitudes and commitments.
Because we are a nation of laws, right? We want to uphold laws. Just a report out just the other day, right? Just yesterday, the least number of deportations since 2006. And, of course, I think Jerry mentioned the know, San Francisco Sanctuary City, that became a news item here just a few months ago with, you know, tragic killing. You know, we, I guess we need to learn how to balance that, you know, because we probably do assume that the law is good if it's American. And you're saying that, you know, we need some updating and streamlining and some clarification.
Yes, and I think what we have to realize, too, is that immigrants, just like citizens, are sinners, and there'll be a certain portion of any population, whether citizen or not, that are going to be the bad apples. And so we shouldn't be surprised when we find some immigrants who are violent, because no matter what ethnic group you come from, that's just what it means to be human in a fallen world. And if I can go back real quick, if you don't mind,
sure,
about the cultural piece, one of the things that is the beauty of this country as well, but it's a painful process, is that this country is has a history of cultural absorption and morphing. And so, for instance, you know, if you go back to Irish immigration at the end of the 19th century, this country was very unwelcoming to the Irish and very demeaning to the Irish. And that's a very sad story. But now look how we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Even with the Hispanic side, what you're seeing is the absorption into this country of Latin American music, Latin American food. And so what this country has this ability to do, though it can be an awkward process that many times can take many years, whether you're talking about the Germans or the Irish or the Italians and now Hispanics and the Asians, is that this country has this ability to morph and to absorb and to appreciate the input from these cultures. And so that's a whole other discussion that we can get into that I never hear talked about either.
Yeah. Well, let's come back after the break and jump into that a bit more. Talking Christians at the Border. That's the title of the book written by Daniel Carroll. The subtitle is Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. And we do have some copies to give away. We do the drawing here at the end of the hour for these four books. And you'll find it helpful and thoughtful and stimulating, hopefully, as we consider these important discussions. 877-933-2484 is our phone number. Danny Carroll's an Old Testament professor and also is an adjunct professor at Central American Theological Seminary in Guatemala City and author of several books, including Christians at the Border. More on that topic in a moment. Daniel Carroll today about his book, Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. And one of the things we talked about is that we as followers of Christ are, in fact, sojourners. First Peter talks about that and what a difference that would make if we kind of had that perspective. And Danny has a mother from Guatemala, and so he, you know, has grown up in that environment and still does some teaching in Guatemala at the Theological Seminary in Guatemala City. Just interested, we were just talking before the break about, you know, the integration of, you know, immigrants, and you mentioned, you know, giving the Irish as an example. I mean, just interested maybe to follow up on that. You know, what does it mean to be maybe an American, and maybe for you, do you bring a different look at that, having, you know, a mother that's sort of growing up in Latin America for some years?
What does it mean to be American? Well, that's interesting because America is so so different. I mean, you know, if it's, you know, what it means American. Well, Harlem is American. Cajun Louisiana is American. Surfers on, you know, San Diego coastline. You know, farmers in Iowa, and as I mentioned those, I'm giving you different races, I'm giving you different backgrounds, I'm giving you different accents. I think what needs to hold this country together, and it's difficult, is cultural things such as language. And when you find immigrants learning the language, it's hard. English is not an easy language. Usually that occurs by the second generation. That's been true throughout the history of this country. It's interesting. I have an article written by Benjamin Franklin, and he was worried about the Germans. And he was worried about Germans becoming integrated into their English culture. And he had, you know, some racism there. I mean, he talks about, well, you know, they're not the same pigmentation as we who come from the English background. And I guess you have to have a pretty fine eye to distinguish, you know, the shades of white between a German and an Englishman. But this whole idea of integration is always been what's been on, you know, discussion. And but it's one of the beauties of the country. I mean, the country has morphed. Before the turn into the 20th century, the country was primarily Protestant, and this is what made it hard for the Irish and the Italians to come in, because they were primarily Catholic. So those discussions we have forgotten, and this is one of the beautiful things about the Old Testament, talking about all this kind of integration stuff, is that it says, don't ever forget that once you were immigrants, once you were slaves in Egypt. And I think what happens in this country is we have forgotten the stories, the difficult stories of the adaptation and the integration of our ancestors who may have been Polish or from Hungary or from Norway or from, you know, Latin America, Southern Europe. We have forgotten all those stories. And if we would go back to those stories, as the Old Testament tells his people, God's people, to go back to those stories, it might make this integration discussion make a little more common sense and have a little more compassion than it usually does.
Yeah, good word. Let's take Kathy's call. She's calling from Watertown, Wisconsin. We're talking about, speaking of, I guess, being fearful or concerned. Kathy had a question about inviting, well, being hospitable. Kathy, you're on with Danny Carroll. Go ahead.
Hi. I've got what I think is kind of a hard question. The whole idea of having immigrants come, I'm real open to everybody coming. Like you brought up the Irish when they came and the other influx of peoples. But our government has been talking about hundreds of thousands of Syrians coming here to escape the war. And not all Syrians are just escaping the war. And that, because I thought it'd be great if, like, of all the churches in the country, I've heard someone say this, if all the churches in the country just took one family, we take a big, big bite out of that, you know, trying to take care of those people. But at the same time, there's that, you know, are we allowing an infiltration of destructive, you know what I'm trying to get at?
Sleeper cells.
Violent,
sure.
Yeah, sleeper cells.
Yeah, let's talk about that I guess that concern. How do we manage that, Danny?
Well, I think it's a great question, and it's a natural question, and it's really an inescapable question. And that's, how do you eliminate that? Well, the thing, what the media will tend to do is kind of do the extremes, right? So, golly, there may be some sleeper cells integrated into the, you know, thousands of Syrians. And so then the reaction is, well, then we don't do any. Well, it seems to me that's really kind of a silly stance. So the stance should be, well, we know that we have 4 million Syrians fleeing the war. Will there be some sleeper cells? Well, I guess there could be, and maybe we should even say probably. But then the question is, then you put into place the proper filters. Then that becomes the pragmatic discussion within the larger humanitarian discussion. And that's where I think we need to go. And the very fact that we would be welcoming them in, those who would be of a different faith, actually allows us as Christians to begin to penetrate that faith with the love of Christ. So I would just reframe the discussion. The discussion is a humanitarian discussion, and then the political discussion gets subsumed under it with the establishment of proper filters and proper follow-up once they arrive.
Danny, if we were, I mean, we were, you know, getting short on time. We have 4 minutes left. I mean, if you were going to reframe the discussion, I mean, as you've talked about, is one of the things I want to ask you maybe is, does Jesus provide a model for us? But, I mean, if you were reframing the discussion, both maybe in terms of how the church looks at it from a biblical foundation, but then the pragmatic side, what are the touch points that need reframing or a new way to look at things?
I think the most important thing is to know where to begin the discussion. I think a lot of people begin the discussion on the legal end of things, which to me is something you have to get to, but it's not the starting point. I think as Christians, the starting point is the starting point of looking at human need. And then what you do then is think through the pragmatics of meeting that need instead of just locking the discussion in terms of legal status. It turns everything backwards. So let me give you a quick example because I know we're short on time. But this whole Dream Act thing of kids who came when they were very small with their parents. Well, if we understand that everyone's made in the image of God, then the idea is how do we facilitate all the potential of these young people in our schools for the national good? Now, that just changes the whole discussion on what to do with young people. If you see them as made in the image of God with potential, then it's a question of facilitating versus punishing. And now the tone has changed, the direction of the laws have changed, and it's for the national good. And so the starting point, I think, is what needs to get changed for Christians. Human needs, image of God, start from there and then move to the pragmatic with that set of values.
And, you know, when we look to Jesus, what do we see in terms of how he interacted and maybe addressed this?
Well, what you see Jesus doing is working with people who were despised. Despised ethnically, the Samaritans, despised culturally, the lepers and the prostitutes, the people who were marginalized because of their hunger. What you're seeing him do is the very thing that should also be a driving set of values from a Christian point of view of immigration. Again, Jesus isn't having them pass through some kind of legal test before he deals with them. He will actually confront the powers because of their cruelty. And, of course, he goes to death at the hands of the Roman soldiers. But I think that's part of it. We've just got this whole thing wrong. We've got to reorient the discussion in terms of image of God, in terms of human need, in terms of the example of Jesus. And the very fact that we are called to have a church that will be multicultural, where all those kind of barriers are broken down, is also a challenge. I could go on and on about all of this. I mean, the epistles are full of this kind of stuff. But I know our time is short. But there is so much, if we would just take the Bible seriously and the example of Jesus seriously, that would change the Christian tone on this and maybe the Christian contribution on this debate.
Now, let's pray that that would be so. Danny Carroll's book can be a good resource to help in that conversation, maybe just thinking things from a fresh perspective. Christians at the Borders, the name of the book. Subtitle is Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. Danny Carroll teaches, is Distinguished Professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary, also teaches in Guatemala City, and we are honored to have him back with us today on Connecting Faith. Danny, thanks so much for your good thinking on this and leading us in this important discussion.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure, as always, and I'm always willing to come back, so thank you.
We'll do it again, hopefully soon. Christians at the Borders, the conversation. The book is from Brazos Press. It's a division of Baker. And you can find this interview here after the show. We post the podcast on the Connecting Faith show page. So if you missed part of it or want to pass it on to a friend, it's all shareable. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page.